Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome back to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford, and today we have someone whose professional journey truly embodies the spirit of a trailblazer. Our guest is Mike Wilson, the president and CEO of Members First Federal Credit Union, one of the largest credit unions in Pennsylvania. Mike's story spans public policy, small business entrepreneurship, including his role as a partner at the Vineyard and Brewery at Hershey, and more than a decade of executive leadership in the credit union space. He's a lifelong champion of servant leadership, the president of the Members First Charitable Foundation, a board member of the Cross State Credit Union Foundation, and the Harrisburg Regional Chamber and CREDC. And if that weren't enough, he was recently named to the Central Pennsylvania Business Journal's Power 100 list, recognizing the region's most influential leaders. From lobbyist to relationship manager to CEO to visionary, guiding an institution towards the $10 billion benchmark, Mike's journey is as dynamic as it is inspiring. Mike, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Mike, your story has so many layers: public policy, advocacy, entrepreneurship, and financial services. When someone asks, who's Mike Wilson, where do you begin?
I would probably say that my life has been a little bit like a real-life, modern-day version of Forrest Gump. So just have to be That's open great. To possibilities and meet great people along the way and be kind and do the right thing.
That's awesome. Before your time in financial services, though, you served as a lobbyist in Harrisburg for a number of years. Mm-hmm. What drew you to public policy, and what did those early experiences teach you about relationships and influence and community impact?
Sure. Advocating for others is the why behind all of it. Same reason why I do what I do today, just in a different capacity. It's really interesting. My career really started in education, helping underserved and underprivileged students, you know, really trying to be there for them, be encouraging to them if they had a pretty tough deck of cards that they were dealt, letting them know that, you know, not only do they have people that they can rely on, they also have a pathway out. Mm-hmm. And from doing that in individual schools to being able to do that for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, as part of a governor's administration. And then that's really what led to the advocacy side of it and the lobbying piece of it after that. So it was really during that time when I was lobbying that I also had a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit. Mm. And so I got involved with a startup nonprofit, and I also got involved with a startup business in a partnership. And during both of those ventures was how I met the leadership of Members First. They were my credit union. And so I figure I have, you know, an entrepreneurial need in trying to get this nonprofit started and trying to, you know, take this small business with my partners to the next level. And the leadership at the credit union helped me when nobody else probably would have. And so getting that exposure in working with them and getting a much better sense, a little bit more behind the scenes of what it was like at Members First. And through getting to know that executive leadership really well, that led to some, you know, I would say recruitment and partnership conversations. And man, it's been almost 10 years. So almost 10 years ago, I took a leap of faith and just, you know, figured out, well, we'll see where this lands, but I really like this place. I like the people. And if it leads to something awesome where I can do good for others and help take a chance on people the way they took a chance on me, and here we are today.
Wow. Now, before I dive too far into your journey with Members First, because there's a lot of good stuff going on there.
Sure.
A lot of people don't know this, but you were a partner at the Vineyard and Brewery at Hershey. Mm-hmm. What did entrepreneurship and hands-on business ownership teach you that you still use as a CEO today?
So many things. You know, number one, if you're in a partnership structure, you learn a lot about partnerships. But being able to go through the phases of a business is something that I truly understand. You know, when you start from absolutely nothing, It forces innovation. When you don't have big budgets and resources to rely on, it's your grit and your sheer will and determination that can help to not only start a business, but then propel it through the next stages. And when you have employees that are relying on you to support their families, you know, you feel the weight of all of that. So I admire entrepreneurs so deeply and the courage that they have. And I feel a sense of obligation to make sure that we as a credit union are always doing our best to be able to support those entrepreneurs because they have a lot of courage to do what they do every day.
It's awesome that you can bring that into your new role. Well, not new role, but it was good that you were able to bring that into the role that you now serve in.
Yeah, there's a lot more to a decision behind supporting a business than just credit and what's on paper. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we deeply value, and it's something that we put into practice. So we have a literal loan committee that meets every week. And part of those discussions are, you know, who is the person? What is their character? What do they do in the community? Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things are part of a holistic decision, not just a credit decision on paper.
That's incredible. You mentioned how you got introduced to Members First. How did you first get recruited into Members First? I know you joined as a relationship manager, which is quite different from the CEO seat. Mm-hmm. Walk us through the path, and at what point in your journey did you realize, I'm ready for executive leadership?
Yeah. So getting back to a little earlier in the conversation, I was helping to start a nonprofit group. So it was a young professionals group in the Carlisle, Pennsylvania area. There was a vibrant downtown. There was a thriving small business community. There was a university. There were things happening, but there wasn't like a collective or cohesive, you know, something that would bring all of that together and give young professionals more of a collaborative way to not just socialize, but give back to the community and support those small businesses. Mm-hmm. So in seeing a need for that, you know, I wanted to get involved and help to support the downtown area by helping to launch that. But I had never been involved with starting a nonprofit before, so I didn't really know where to go. I needed some resources to be able to do that and just a teeny tiny bit of seed money to be able to get that launched and get the 501 status established. And Members First was able to help with that. And the same thing with the small business when we were launching the Vineyard and Brewery at Hershey. You know, again, we were just a total startup with more dreams than capital resources. And we just needed a little bit of help, you know, to be able to go ahead and get that started. And, you know, I'm so grateful, Members First, and our longtime CEO, Bob Marquette, who's a legend in this industry, he and then our what would have been our chief marketing officer, George Nahodal, were willing to sit down and to take a chance. You know, I distinctly remember putting business plans together for both and knocking on George's door. Like I cold called him, and to his credit, he was willing to take a meeting with me. And I presented my little business plans, and that was the start of our relationship. And, you know, I'm deeply grateful for those things. And so it's for those same reasons I will always, you know, feel great about paying it forward and, you know, being willing to take meetings with people, but also more importantly, to take chances on people. That's what makes us a credit union.
Yeah. Now, your bio emphasizes your longstanding commitment to servant leadership, and you touched on that a little bit. But what does your servant leadership look like in practice, especially at an institution with thousands of associates and hundreds of thousands of members?
Sure. Well, I mean, the tenets of servant leadership are, they're pretty consistent, you know, no matter where you go. And it's putting others above yourself. And if you do the right thing, you know, and you help other people, good things are going to happen. What I was really trying to do with those leadership programs, I would say I'm probably a little bit extra. every county in our footprint in Members First, we represent 12 counties, but basically every county has its own version of leadership programs. Sometimes they're named after the counties, sometimes they're named after a region, whatever have you. Mm. But at the time, I went through the Leadership Harrisburg program. And I really enjoyed not just the principles of servant leadership, but how they applied it within that community. Mm-hmm. So from there, I decided to do the one in Cumberland County, and then looking into the one in York County, then the one in Lancaster County, then the one in Lebanon County. So that really encompassed our entire footprint. And I was just fascinated. And that took just shy of 5 years to do, by the way.
Wow.
But learning how all of those principles were applied within each of those communities because they're so drastically different was pretty darn fascinating. And that was really the why behind it.
And so you speak about, you know, establishing these programs. I mean, is that a part of the succession plan? Like, what's your vision for that? What's the purpose beyond servant leadership, obviously, but even for the individual, for the associate?
Sure. I mean, we're always supportive if an associate member's first wants to go through those things. My why was a little bit different. I really wanted to not only understand the principles of servant leadership, but more importantly, I grew up moving around every few years. And so when you do that, you don't really have a sense of place or a sense of community. You don't grow up with childhood friends. You're always in transition. You're always adjusting to a new market, new people, new things. And I really, you know, made the conscious decision, this is my home. I'm going to establish roots here. And in order to be able to be effective and to want to give back to the community, you need to understand it. Mm-hmm. And the same principles that apply in the things that make the Harrisburg region tick are not the same things that make the regions tick in York or Lancaster or Lebanon or, you know, now that we've expanded it across 12 counties, they're all uniquely different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was probably the biggest learning lesson, is that you have to go in with an open mind and understand what makes this community tick, and then who are the people that are behind all of that giving back and doing good things. And once you understand those things, you can have a better sense on how to support them.
Mm-hmm. How far? What is the reach? What is the footprint of Members First?
Sure. Well, now we're across 12 counties, just over 621,000 members as of yesterday.
Wow.
25,000 small businesses that we support. And that's just our physical footprint. We are in rapid growth mode, so we will be expanding across a fairly wide swath of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited about that. And we have an awful lot to offer, not just from a consumer side, but really being able to support small businesses is such a core part of our values and who we are and what we're able to do on a daily basis.
And if somebody wanted to approach, you know, Members First and do business with them, who is the ideal client? What kind of business are you looking for?
Yeah, I would say we're really well equipped to help entrepreneurs and small to medium-sized businesses. So mega companies that, you know, have a global presence and have, you know, needs, I don't ever want us to represent and try to say that we're something that we're not. You know, you can't be all things to all people, but
right.
We're really darn good at helping entrepreneurs and small to medium-sized businesses.
That's good to know. You also serve as president of the Members First Charitable Foundation, supporting grassroots organizations across South Central and Northeastern PA. What inspires your passion for community-based philanthropy, and how important is it?
Yeah, that's a big part of who we are. All of this ties into, I would say, really what our core values and our differentiators. And so, you know, I would say if you go out into the local community, any kind of grassroots or local event, the odds are you're going to see us there because that's what we support and it's how we get involved. There are three things that we really focus on. We take really good care of our associates because if we take really good care of our associates, they will in turn take really good care of our members.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do a good job taking care of our members, we will have more resources to share with the communities that we serve. So it literally starts in that order. And while giving back to the community is a key part of what we do, we can only do as good with the resources that we have. And all of that starts with making sure that we take really good care of our people.
Mm. That's a great foundation. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the awards, some of your accolades. I'm going to go there. I know that this is kind of like, you know, for you.
Yeah, it's a little embarrassing.
You've been recognized with numerous business awards, and most recently, the Central PA Business Journal named you to the Power 100 list. And just last week, you received the Edward Messner Inspiring Business Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
From the West Shore Chamber. What does recognition mean to you at this point in your career, and what example do you hope it demonstrates for other leaders and for other aspiring leaders?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. It's a tough question because I feel awkward with these kinds of things. These are not things that I submit for myself. So it is sometimes it's a little bit of a surprise when you get an email and you learn about these things. To be candid with you, it does absolutely nothing for me. But if I can use it as a platform to be able to inspire others and to help others, I mean, I absolutely have what I would call probably an odd background or a non-traditional background that's led to the pathway to get here. And if that can be an example for other people that, you know, if you're a scrapper and you've got some grit and hustle and determination, but more importantly, if your motivation behind all of that is pure, then hopefully that's a good example for others that they can achieve the same results.
Well, very deserving nevertheless. Credit unions are unique. People often compare them to banks without understanding the deeper difference. Share with our listeners what some of those differences are, the opportunities that they actually offer members, and can you also share some of the challenges credit unions have been facing as of late and what some of your advocacy work has been to overcome some of those challenges?
Sure. You know, I appreciate this question because from a consumer's perspective, I think sometimes there's a fair amount of confusion. And so we have to do a better job, I think, as an industry, just really educating people on what is the difference. And the difference is really just, it's purely foundational. So it's not like a one is good and one is bad. And I feel the need to stress that. It is just at the end of the day, the foundational model of a bank and the foundational model of a credit union are just two drastically different things. So if you're looking at the structure of the bank, there are shareholders. And what you're trying to do behind that model is you want your shares to be valuable because you've made the investment as a shareholder in that. That's the purpose of it, right?
Sure.
And they do great things helping people along the way. I want to be very clear about that. There are great banks. There are very good bankers. There are great people. There are great bank CEOs. And a credit union, just by its foundation, is a not-for-profit. And so with the resources that go into starting a credit union, as opposed to going to shareholders through return on quarterly earnings and things along these lines, those proceeds get reinvested back into the business to share amongst its members for more resources. This is why there are not paid shareholders, like in our model, for example. Our board of directors is a nonprofit volunteer group of people. And I think that's pretty wonderful that they're willing to volunteer their time to do that because they don't get paid. Yet they are fiduciaries for an $8.5 billion company. And with that carries a tremendous amount of responsibility. And that is just the difference in two models, right? So again, not that one is good and one is bad. They're just very different foundations.
And tell me a little bit about any challenges that credit unions have been facing in your advocacy work in that space.
I know that earlier this year, you know, we were trying to advocate for ourselves because there was discussion about taking away the nonprofit status of credit unions. And that would have a tremendous impact on the industry. And that's because, you know, you take a look at what we're able to do as a nonprofit. We focus heavily on giving back to the communities that we serve. I mean, we quantify this at the end of every year. But I mean, my word, just countless hours that our associates are giving of their time, the charitable giving and the contributions that we make to local nonprofits. And, you know, again, even in areas that we serve, sometimes these are banking deserts and there are not a lot of, you know, options for consumers in some of these markets. And we're there and we represent strong in those markets. And, you know, we're able to do those things because of our foundational model. And we just need to make sure that we do a really good job explaining that story. Just other, I could point to so many examples just over the history of credit unions. But one item I will absolutely point back to because it's an example of, you know, credit unions doing the right thing. We're approaching 6 years removed since the pandemic in 2020. What a really tough time. What a really uncertain time, not only for industries, but especially a scary time for small business owners, right? And one thing I am super proud of is the fact that, You know, when the PPP loans came out, these were brand new things. You know, there was not a lot of, but we knew we needed to help these businesses because a lot of them were waiting in a queue and they weren't getting the help they needed or the attention they needed. We took that time to get educated very quickly. And we worked directly with the White House and the SBA to figure out how do we do these things. And then we transformed the company for a period of time where everybody focused on processing these PPP loans. I distinctly remember being up with our team. Sometimes we were up till 2-3 in the morning, you know, processing these things and trying to send notes of encouragement to everyone to keep going. And we were doing that to support the community. We were doing that to support thousands of small business owners in our market. And we ended up being the 9th largest provider in the country of those kinds of loans for our industry. And again, that is a great example of we're just doing the right thing. We're not looking at the bottom line when we're doing that. And I firmly believe that's a reason today why we are helping to support 25,000 small businesses across our footprint of Pennsylvania.
It was a challenging time, and it's good to know that, you know, there were partners out there like Members First in order to be able to align and guide that process. I've also, I will say that I know that there are select employer groups or larger employers within the Lehigh Valley, because you guys have a footprint here that, you know, you're doing financial literacy programs, you know, you're engaging some of those employees in order to be able to help them from a wellness, from a financial wellness perspective, and aligning with the company in order to be able to do so. So that's, well, I'm grateful that you guys are here. That's for sure.
Sure. We do that, you know, with employers all day, every day, but we also do it in school systems. Mm-hmm. And another area where we do that is helping spouses of active duty military folks that are on deployment. You know, oftentimes they may run the household, and so they leave a household behind, and, you know, someone is at home trying to support their families, but they don't understand, you know, how to budget or how to, you know, where can I go to find money and resources as I'm trying to pay my bills and support my family while my spouse is out on deployment. I mean, we do these things all the time.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that you're an $8.5 billion company, but you're approaching the $10 billion benchmark. Members First is working toward that landmark goal of $10 billion in assets, which brings a heightened level of governance and regulatory oversight. How are you preparing the organization for that milestone? What changes, operational, cultural, or strategic, do you anticipate once Members First crosses that threshold?
Sure. I would say that it's probably really important to know this is not a goal for us, but rather it is inevitable for us because of the way that we're growing as we support our consumer and small business members. It just means having a plan and making sure that we're working on the infrastructure that we need, that the technology needs that we're going to have in the future, that we're prepared for all of that. And so we're kind of just working backwards from, I would say, a timeline and a milestone to make sure that we're extremely well equipped to be able to adjust to the new regulatory world that we'll be navigating, as you know, once we hit that milestone. So I would say to consumer members, to small business members, to the community, that they won't know any of that because we'll just keep doing what we do. And we just need to make sure that we're investing in our infrastructure and our technology to be able to continue to remain nimble and efficient while we continue to grow.
Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Very exciting.
We're actually seeing a lot of innovative programs and community-facing campaigns and some collaborations coming out of Members First. What strategic initiatives are you most excited about right now, and how do they tie into long-term sustainability and member experience? And I'm just going to mention here, because I know that you guys are emerging into the Pocono market. Mm-hmm. You guys did a really cool collaboration with Pocono Raceway. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what's new, what's exciting right now that you guys are doing?
Sure. I think there's a community aspect with new markets that, you know, that we'll be growing into. But there's a technology component of this with advancements in AI as well. So the answer to your question is kind of twofold. You know, I think this gets back to anytime you're growing into a community, you need to understand that community. You need to know who makes it tick and how can you best support their efforts. Up in the Poconos, that raceway means everything To that market.
Sure.
And they do such wonderful things. They are truly wonderful partners. They're easy to work with. I think they're just as creative and innovative as we are. Our cultures align. They're a family-owned business as well. Mm. And so getting to know the owner of the raceway and the president of the raceway, getting to know their family and the history behind it, but most importantly, what they do. And so, this year we were able to try some pretty interesting things leading up to and surrounding the race, but there was a lot that went on around both sides of that that's still going on. So I know that they do a lot to support the health system. Right near the Toby Hanna Army Depot, mm-hmm. There are initiatives that we've partnered with to support Gold Star families. That's important to us because we were started on the naval base in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, 75 years ago. So, mm-hmm. We have a lot in common. And so we're really excited about that partnership and to be able to continue to grow it. And so I think that is just indicative of an example of, when you're growing into a market, you find great partners and you start out supporting the community and doing what's good for the community before you build your branches there. And we're doing the same thing in the Susquehanna Valley, by the way. So taking the same approach and partnering with the right nonprofit organizations, partnering with the right groups. And we will have been working on this for quite some time before our branches start to open there. And that's our difference. That's what we do. We don't build branches and then say, okay, we're here, and then wait for everyone to show up. We, get involved with boots on the ground well before we open any physical facilities.
Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, beyond, expanding the footprint, you're the second largest credit union in the state, are you not?
Third now.
Okay, mm-hmm. Third.
Yeah, but we're all pretty darn close.
Yeah.
in asset size. So some of these things may change at any given time, but we do not measure ourselves that way.
Okay.
From a CEO's perspective, it is not important to me to either be number three or get to number one. What's important to me is that we do the right thing in all of the markets that we serve and that we stay relevant to helping our members through the right needs to be able to meet them where they are as consumers or as small businesses. And if we do those things properly, I believe that the growth will just naturally follow. So as long as, again, we have to take really good care of our associates, that's priority number one. We have a very special culture at Members First. And in order to continue to nurture that culture, we've got to take care of our people. And if we do that and we stay relevant in being able to meet the needs of our members, good things will happen.
You actually answered my question. I was going to say, one of the largest in PA, celebrating 75 years, but, what's next for the credit union? But you actually answered that. Finally, you've had a multidimensional career, a lobbyist, an entrepreneur, a relationship manager, executive CEO. What's the leadership lesson you're most committed to passing on to the next generation of trailblazers?
I would say always do the right thing and pay it forward for other people. We do not get to these roles on our own. And, we have people that have helped us along the way throughout different points in careers. Always remember that. Never forget those kinds of things. And then it's up to you when you're in positions like these to be able to do that for others as well. And, the other piece of this is you have to constantly be learning. Mm-hmm. The world is changing. And again, I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility. We have 1,300 associates at Members First who do great work and they work with such passion. And it's my obligation to make sure that we are doing what we need to do as a company, but also that we're adhering to our cultural values every day. And so making sure that we never lose sight of our culture, it is absolutely our differentiator. And it's something very special that we have to continue to protect and nurture and not just say, oh, well, we're becoming a larger company now and, make those things a little bit less of a priority. It always needs to be the number one priority. And then willing to constantly be learning. Right now, you can't bury your head in the sand with what's happening with AI. Mm-hmm. We have to lean into that and we have to embrace that. And so I'm learning a good bit about that technology and how it works. And we have to pursue it cautiously. You know, we're a regulated industry, mm-hmm. But we have to think about, you know, how are we going to lean into the benefits of this technology? And then my focus at the CEO level is to make sure that we're using that technology to support our people, not replace our people. And so, you know, again, that's a differentiator with how we're going to protect our culture. We're in the relationships business, mm-hmm. and we're going to double down on the people side, but we can lean into these technologies to make ourselves more efficient, which will better leverage our time to be able to spend on those relationships.
Mike, your story is a testament to the idea that leadership is a journey, not a position. You've shown us that influence comes from service, growth comes from intention, and real leadership comes from staying connected to people, whether they're customers, colleagues, or entire communities. Your path proves that the most meaningful leaders are the ones who build as they rise and lift as they serve. Thank you for sharing your insight, your experience, and your heart for community. To our listeners, let Mike's story remind you that every chapter counts and every step of your journey can shape your leadership in ways you can't even imagine. This is Trailblazers. I'm Melody Bradford. Keep rising, keep leading, and keep blazing your trail.